Welcome to EDUCAUSE Now. I'm Jerry Bain. On this edition of EDUCAUSE Now, we find out about the FCC's recent net neutrality proposal and how it will affect higher ed IT. We also talk to Dartmouth's Joshua Kim about open content and blogging. If you'd like to find out more about the stories and interviews you hear on EDUCAUSE Now, visit our show notes at www.educause.edu/now. In December, FCC Chairman Julius Genachowski introduced a controversial net neutrality proposal creating two classes of internet access, one for fixed line providers and one for wireless net. I spoke with EDUCAUSE Policy Director Steve Verona to find out what this new proposal contains and what it means for higher education.
The concern, and this might be put in stark relief with a quote from Ed Whitaker, who is the CEO of AT&T. He said this a number of years ago. And he said, companies like Google and Amazon want to get to my customers using my pipes for free, and I don't see why they should be able to do that. Well, that would turn the internet into something looking like the cable TV model of the world, where if you're a subscriber to the internet, you didn't have access to any internet site, but only the internet sites that your local service provider was willing to give you access to. And it's generally felt throughout the networking community, throughout the community of the folks who created the internet, namely higher ed, that turning the internet into a cable TV model would be a bad idea. The FCC has recognized that that's true and has tried to establish regulations to keep that from happening. Now, the importance for higher ed is that more and more of our community, more and more of our students, our researchers, even more and more of our staff are doing their jobs, are obtaining their education from their homes, relying on their local ISPs, relying on being able to get back to our campus servers without regard to what ISP they are starting from. And the specter of the Ed Whitaker model is that campuses would have to make special arrangements with the Comcasts and Verizons and Time Warners and AT&Ts of the world in order to be able to get to all of our students and faculty and staff. Imagine if an ISP, such as Comcast, merged with a for-profit educational institution, such as the University of Phoenix, and made a special arrangement by which Comcast customers could only be reached by, or could only be effectively reached by, services coming from that particular for-profit educational institution. Suddenly, all of the normal educational distance learning activities would be disadvantaged with respect to getting to their users on Comcast networks.
So can you talk about a little bit about what was in this proposal and what it means to internet users in general and higher education in particular?
Well, the hope for those of us who've been pushing the FCC to enact strong network neutrality openness regulations was that they would lay out the rules, is that they would make it very clear that this type of paid prioritization or other non-neutral service provision would simply be against FCC regulations and would be ruled out from the start. The FCC didn't go quite that far. They laid out some principles by which they would make case-by-case decisions. If some business doing service over the internet felt aggrieved by what an ISP was doing, to bring action through the FCC to say, no, this is in violation of your principles. Now, this isn't necessarily a bad thing. We'll have to see how it plays out. But the concern is that treating this as a case-by-case decision, putting the burden on the organization, whether it's a campus or a business that has been treated in a non-neutral way, putting the burden on that organization to bring the case is not as good as things ought to be. There are other arcane issues floating around. The FCC recognized that reasonable network management, that's the technical phrase, might be a reason by which an ISP would have to treat different traffic from different locations differently, and there is some concern, as we saw happen a while ago, a few months ago, that Comcast began blocking BitTorrent. And they eventually said, well, the only reason they were blocking BitTorrent was because it was using up too much network traffic. But we know from various cases that they were blocking BitTorrent regardless of how much network traffic was being used. But this loophole of reasonable network management is something that many of us have concerns about. The FCC also made the point that cellular internet connections, wireless internet connections, had different network management problems than did wireline internet connections, and made it clear that the FCC was intending to give cellular internet providers more flexibility than they were willing to give the wireline providers. That's a concern because as we look into the future, more and more of the internet connectivity is going to be going over cellular providers. And for example, we know that cellular providers would much rather sell you minutes using your voice plan rather than having you bypass their voice plan using something like Skype. So there's another area where we're going to be watching very carefully.
EDUCAUSE Policy Director, Steve Verona. Joshua Kim wears more than a few hats. He's Director of Learning and Technology for the Master of Healthcare Delivery Science Program at Dartmouth College. He's also an ECAR Fellow, and he blogs for Inside Higher Ed. I spoke to Kim at the EDUCAUSE 2010 Annual Conference.
You're giving a presentation here at EDUCAUSE 2010 about publishing lectures to YouTube. This speaks to the big picture concern with many institutions regarding open access, keeping their product behind authentication walls and the new economy of sharing. Can you use this concept as a jumping off point to talk about some of those larger issues?
Sure. Jerry, first, I just want to say thank you for inviting me for this conversation.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I've listened to you for years, so it's exciting to... Cool. To be on the other end of this.
Great.
And as I said before, this is my first podcast.
Right.
We have two very big trends going on now in higher education. You have the open education movement, which is exploding, really. MIT has led the way. Yale, Stanford, Carnegie Mellon. There's lots of schools that are putting more and more of their educational materials out there for the world. And we know this is a very good thing to do for alumni, for prospective students, and simply to contribute to the educational commons. On the other side, we have this new enterprise lecture capture system coming in. So what the idea is and the hope is that lecture capture systems can be a lever or a platform or a tool to get more of what happens on campuses out there into the open educational world. And I'm hoping that we can get a group of people together at EDUCAUSE who are interested in pushing this change. There's a lot of difficulties in doing this. There's lots of concerns about copyright, about privacy. There's simply a lot of issues. But I think that lecture capture and presentation capture will very much help us get into this new world of open educational content.
Mm-hmm. And what does the lecture capture system look like? I mean, is it simply a video recording device, or that's what it is?
I think that's a great question, and that the traditional lecture capture system is a way to record the audio that what happens in a classroom, as well as what happens on the presenter's screen and often a camera. So you capture the image of the faculty member lecturing. Where this is going, however, is that it's moving from lecture capture to presentation capture, so that there's a lot more opportunities to capture what happens, to record what happens on campus, including what the students do. I think this is really important, that most of the knowledge produced on any campus is produced by the students. They're doing this incredible work, and they're doing original research, and often the work that they will do is the most advanced that's being done. It would be wonderful if we could find a way that the student work, rather than being siloed only between the student and the professor or staying behind walls of the classroom, can get out there into the wider world. A lot of people have concerns that if we're publishing all this material to, say, YouTube or iTunes U, won't there be just too much stuff? I mean, how will we judge the quality? And my argument is that the web is very good at collaboratively filtering the materials. The cream rises to the top, and people find good stuff. And I don't think we should be worried about getting as much stuff out there as possible. So again, I'm very much hoping that we don't simply replicate the traditional lecture faculty-centered model, but think about this as a way for everything that's going on campus to be shared.
I'm also curious, if a student is contributing content to a lecture or contributing content in some way that may be published,
Who owns that? Is it the student, or is it the university, or is it a collaborative effort?
I think all these are very good questions, ownership, branding control. But what I see is that faculty and students are going to start publishing their materials out there anyway. And as institutions and people who work in higher education, we need to be out in front of this. We need to make policies and figure out ways to support people who want to do this, because it's going to happen anyway.
Can you talk about your experiences with blogging about educational technology? I know you're an avid blogger. What would be your advice to other bloggers thinking of starting?
So I do the learning and technology blog for Inside Higher Ed. It's been a wonderful experience on a number of levels. My main advice for blogging is that the reason to blog is because you do it for yourself. If you're blogging for someone else or someone else's reasons or someone else's goals, you won't do it. In my experience, having the discipline to sit and write each day about the big things that I'm thinking about or dealing with in education and technology, it helps me synthesize the information. It helps me bring it all together. I often don't know really what I'm thinking until I sit down and write it. And it also gives me an opportunity to have a conversation, because I'll write some things and sometimes people will respond and we'll go back and forth. And that's the most gratifying event when we have these conversations. So I would say I think everyone should be doing it, or if they want to do it, or commenting or tweeting or being part of the conversation in some way. And I've found that a very easy way to do this is I often don't have a lot of answers, but I definitely have a lot of questions about how things work.
Right.
And it's very easy to ask questions in a blog.
Right.
So that's where anyone could start.
Great. Well, Joshua, thank you so much for your time. Is there anything you'd like to add that we haven't talked about?
No, I mean, this was great. And I hope all of you have a chance to chat with Jerry sometime.
That's great. Well, thanks a lot, Josh.
Joshua Kim, Director of Learning and Technology for the Master of Healthcare Delivery Science Program at Dartmouth College. If you'd like to find out more about the show, visit our show notes at www.educause.edu/now. I'm Jerry Bain for Educause. Thanks for listening.